This is Radio Labour.
Hello, I'm Marc Boulanger. The International Transport Workers Federation, the ITF, is the global union federation which represents unions of air, road, and sea transport workers around the world. On November 12th and 13th, the Road Transport Division of the ITF held a conference in Toronto. The conference included 200 delegates from 76 unions in 44 countries. One of the key speakers at the conference was Tony Sheldon, the National Secretary of Australia's Transport Workers Union, the TWU.
I just want to explain a little bit about what the aspirations are for this presentation and for any of us here to make sure we get the best value out of the conference, that strategies, objectives, plans that we feel as individual unions but as also unions on a collective basis can make a difference. But part of what I'm presenting this morning also is pointing to the conference for a motion that we are foreshadowing for March next year for the next road transport, if it's in March, road transport conference. At the moment, we have the World Health Organization have set a decade of road transport and road safety. And the concentration on what drives unsafe practices on our roads, particularly in the commercial vehicle areas, is very limited. We see pressure on drivers' fatigue, poor incentive systems, which encourage unsafe practices, resulting in substantial supply chain deaths. And the majority of those deaths are in the road transport sector of that supply chain. The misclassification of workers, precarious employment, a series of traditional strategies used by employers across the world, and quite often their lackey governments, in making sure that we are disorganised and don't have the capacity to properly challenge supply chain structures in a way that can deal with the economic power that applies within those supply chains. One of the things that foreshadowing for March, and that is that for people to consider, including the executive, is that there'll be three key elements of a strategy for the ITF Road Transport Division. They consider both a local strategy, much of which we're all collectively doing now, in one way or another, looking at both regulatory and collective employment arrangements regards union and non-unionised workers. Secondly, that we look at national legislation and supply chain regulation. And thirdly, and really encompassing what a win should look like, the ITF considering what would be international arrangements through the ILO to ensure road safety outcomes. Using tactics like internet town halls, Global Transport Institute within the ITF, using international academics, many of which are consecutive, consistent allies with the entire trade union movement across the world, and even internships between countries, where we're not sending officials on trade union holidays, we're sending them on actually to work side by side with union leaders, rank and file workers, that are struggling to deal with the supply chain challenges. And, of course, supplementing both national resources, a strategic approach from the ITF which deals with the whole supply chain challenge, both on a local level, national level, and a national level, looking at critical language that can be used to inspire what a win looks like when you're dealing with the massive supply chains that we do. So this is a case study in that context. Safe rates, which is some language I'll use throughout this presentation, really describes for me about taking the incentive out of unsafe practices, whether that means dealing with poor pay, incentive systems that incentivise unsafe practices, organising owner-operators or owner-drivers to make sure they're getting full compensation for both their wages and the investments of their tools of trade, their truck, and making sure economically we deal with where the economic power is. Because there is very few organised companies in the road transport industry that have any degree of economic power. They are simply price takers, not price makers. In the Australian context, that leads to 330 deaths each year in the heavy vehicle industry. We are 10 times the national average of any other industry, and we see men, women and children as casualties of the pressure that applies to truck drivers. The Australian transport sector, the road transport sector, accounts for 5% of our country's GDP. And their main drivers are the economic power exerted to squeeze the life, literally, out of truck drivers in the supply chain. In the case of our industries, we have two major retailers which dominate the transport task in Australia. 78% of our retail supermarkets work is carried out by Coles and Woolworths. And the critical thing in that presentation is to note that 30.2% of the road transport task is related to retail activity. So when we're looking at where we go after the economic power that drives the poor margins, inflicts pressure on truck drivers, and tries to contract out responsibilities from these retailers, and quite often through the supply chain again and again and again, it's important that we look at these targets that can actually make a difference to the economic power imbalance that occurs in road transport. From an inquiry that was instigated by the National Transport Commission at the behest of the union and a number of our political allies, they come up with a very clear understanding, driving out of coroner's reports, driver surveys, driver evidence, academic reports, that low rates of pay, incentive-based pay, unpaid working time and unreasonable demands is what puts the pressure on the road transport industry, which the consequences being, as we all know too well, fatigue, poor vehicle conditions, speeding and drug use. In the case of Australia, if you're in a conference in Australia right now and you're thinking of driving either to the airport or driving some kilometres home or some miles home, then you can be assured that one in three truck drivers behind you has taken illegal stimulant to work. You can be sure that 20% of the truck drivers have done more than 79 hours that week. And 5% of truck drivers do more than 100 hours in that week. And that's not because they're greedy. It's not because they're determined to be in the rig and travel from day to day, hour to hour. That's because they are having the squeeze, the economic power squeezed on them by the retailers that command such economic power across the supply chain. What the conclusion, of course, and that's injuries and crashes. In the 330 figure, over 5,867 serious injuries and heavy vehicle incidents. In a number of the protests that we have, we'll have everything from victims of truck incidents to ambulance drivers talking about what it's like to come across a truck accident. I shouldn't use that word accident, because accident's like an act of God, someone's God. These are incidents which are usually an act of greed from the clients that are squeezing the life out of trucking. 85% of retail industry truck drivers see the pressure from major clients like Coles is causing dangerous practices in the road transport industry. As part of the demands for safe rates, we've engaged a number of street protests and activities, which then led to a legislative framework which has some key elements, regardless of our legislative differences or law differences in different countries. And that is, how do we actually make the economically powerful accountable for the fatalities on our roads? How do we empower our members to take advantage of legislative capacity? And how do we apply the pressure to those that have got the economic power as it stands at the moment? And what we've concentrated on as part of our framework, and there's orders from industry which says that an order can apply across an entire industry sector. So it actually applies to the entire market. We have collective bargaining for owner drivers and disputes resolution procedure with conciliation and arbitration. We gave up arbitration and negotiations with our government 20 years ago, we as a trade union movement in our country, in so many circumstances. We gave up industry-wide bargaining 20 years ago and went to collective bargaining based on individual companies. in individual sites. And in the last 20 years, people have consistently said that this is the impossible to actually achieve it. And the reason we have achieved it is because of the tribunal and the activities that have happened with our members to actually enforce and to highlight the sorts of strategies, the sorts of conflicts that occur on our roads. Now, how we won safe rates, engaging our membership, was a critical part. We went to our thinking of that framework, both local, national and international. We went to many of our members on the local level and national level, TNT. Our largest strike 2 years ago was at TNT, where we actually were trying to enforce preemptive legislative power to make an obligation on the entire supply chain at TNT. We had literally thousands of workers across the country who had received the wage increase they wanted, had received the pension fund increases they wanted, had received the delegates' rights they wanted, had received the capacity for the union to induct new employees, as we are open shop in Australia. They struck over the fact that they wanted outside labour getting paid the exact same rate of pay that they get, no matter where they are in the TNT supply chain. Literally, as we were striking, hundreds of people were scabbing on us inside that we were striking to get them more pay. Our members clearly understood, after a long struggle, about the challenges that we had, about the fact and the reality is if we cannot organise those workers, if we cannot organise the market, then we will not have good union jobs existing within that company, as was the prevailing argument in many others. So leading up to the legislation, we took direct industrial action over a period of years with various employers within the transport supply chain as far as we could push legislation as it existed at the time, while still arguing for the need for further action. Our members involved, we had over 600 members in the period of 10 years that have had direct relationships with MPs and lobbying them in various constituencies around the country. We engaged our membership in direct protest action. Now, in those activities, you'll see that the period with the Conservatives, but also these activities and these convoys are actually with a Labor government. I'm actually the Senior Vice President of the Labor Party. So we were organising these protests directly to take on our Labor government, to change the climate for them to actually implement legislation. And we used a number of these strategies critically to organise our workers. We had a particular movement in the early 80s where we were able to achieve, as a result of blockades of one of our largest states, innovative and effective legislation to give us the capacity to find minimum rates, organising ability within the state of New South Wales. The problem we made is that whilst we're being so clever about getting the legislative piece, we actually didn't organise enough workers through the process. We had workplace leaders that were very effective and involved, but the organising piece just didn't happen. So the strategy, and just to give you a bit of the climate of what we're now looking at in light of both that experience in the 80s, and I was part of that experience that made the wrong decision, that we've tried to learn from that to look at what is the capacity for us to deliver real growth, real power, because as we know, every law in the land, it doesn't matter whether you've got a law in the land, it's a question whether people are going to exercise their rights and feel they've got the power to exercise it. So in the Australian Trade Union, there's 14.5% across the economy that are part-time employees. We've got 20% of full-time employees. And in the road transport industry, we have 29% of people unionised. We're the second largest private sector unionised industry in Australia. And these are sort of with, you know, rising drivers coming out and their families, talking to the media, talking to politicians about their lives experience. Doing surveys, we're 55%, and again, similar figures from the previous presentations about the deaths, fatalities and injuries and pressures on drivers. You can start seeing the parallels, hearing so much of the speeches from yesterday and again from today, that really the issues that we're facing are just so similar. And of course, those surveys went to the key things of, you know, driving high speeds, carrying overweight loads, where drivers don't have the capacity to say no because they are not economically powerful enough to do it. And where they do have the capacity to say no, they know that if it's a wrong client, their company will lose the contract to somebody else who will not say no. And we've got to work out how we actually deal with those power imbalances, and we feel that we're on, at this point, on the right track in our circumstances. And of course, the strategy goes to the question of clients, the economic power, which I said before. It goes to how we're actually dealing with the major transport companies. And it goes to the transport companies and throughout the supply chain. And went to a question what we said, well, what do we want? We actually decided that the area for us to concentrate on first was 32% of the road transport industry and concentrated in the retail sector. We decided that we'd have the leverage of charters and enforceable charter of rights on major retailers as part of an arbitrated decision we're now pursuing. We're measuring those outcomes about actual membership growth through activism, through identifying in the supply chains that we've selected with employer allies. Getting back to that point, these employers, we're getting now the same rate for the work carried out by a trucking company to what they were getting 40 years ago in Australia. The same equivalent rate. Trucks have got bigger, the work's got harder, the hours have definitely got longer for the drivers. And the market, again, is reflected in various parts, very similar circumstances in other parts of the world. And, of course, the critical thing is having our members organising the unorganised through various strategies and tactics in the supply chain. To actually measuring, having clear targets, clear outcomes, and clear direction, broken down to a site-by-site, company-by-company, and particularly supply chain piece of the market. So we've developed a market strategy, we've built worker networks, we've used leverage in concentrating on one of the most aggressive retailers in the country, the big two. I mentioned before, Wesfarmers, Woolworths and Coles control 78% of the grocery chains in Australia. Smash trucks, sit-ins in stores, protests at the front of stores and protests in the streets, including joining with global solidarity with our colleagues from the Teamsters. And, of course, the strategy is to potentially organise 10,000 workers in the coal supply chain itself. There's an additional, close to our best estimate, is 12,000 because of the truck movements in the Woolworths supply chain. And as we're doing those negotiations, we've now got agreement from Woolworths their online work for 4,000 jobs that have been created for online home deliveries to become union over the next 3 years. Thank you for the presentation and the opportunity.